Jimmy Shapiro here for PredictiveForm.com, joined by general manager of PredictiveForm.com and PredictionMachine.com, Paul Basir, as well as co-founder and editor of PredictiveForm.com, Dan Zucker. And fellas, feels like we had the same conversation a year ago when California Chrome was trying to become the first horse since 1978 to win the Triple Crown. Like the 12 others before him since 78, he failed. American Pharoah has an opportunity to get the Triple Crown, which hasn't happened since 1978. But before we get into the Belmont Stakes, Paul, can you recap the Preakness?
Obviously, the weather conditions threw everything off, which was obviously disappointing for us after putting forth all the analysis that we did and put up on the site and talked about in the last podcast. You know, after hitting the trifecta actually last year in Stone Cold on last year's Preakness, there were three horses again this year that we clearly liked going into the Preakness. And unfortunately, Firing Line and Dortmund were two of them, with obviously American Pharoah carrying some value as well. Firing Line slipped immediately on the outside, and Gary Stevens pulled him back to keep the horse safe before even getting to the stretch. So Firing Line certainly out, so I think weather played a large role in that. Pharoah then went wire to wire, and long shot Tale of Verve, the only other Preakness horse that's now running the Belmont Stakes, closed strong in the slot to get second, and ultimately paid out more than even the winner did, just the place. And I don't know if that's all that relevant, though, because everybody after Pharoah, you can essentially throw the numbers out because of just how bad that track was, how quickly it became a problem. Pharoah had not run a race like that, though, in which it got to the lead immediately and cruised easily. But that was necessary in those conditions, and he really impressed. American Pharoah's 4-furlong pace figure, which was over 80, accounts for the track as well as other factors. It's one of the highest you will ever see, period, regardless of age, regardless of race. That 4-furlong number that American Pharoah put up in the Preakness, which accounts for everything that occurs within the race and what the rest of the competition does, really illustrates how strong he was at that time. And his final pace figure for him was not nearly as impressive from the Preakness Stakes, but of course it's because it wasn't needed. His numbers suggest that he had plenty of energy left, despite the fact that he was winning easily.
For all the Triple Crown races, Paul, there's been a lot of complimentary information and articles and analysis for the users to check out. What's this year for the Belmont Stakes?
It's got pretty comprehensive, and that goes to DZ Dan Zucker for almost all of this, but we've put quite a bit up on the site on Predictive Form, a little bit up on Prediction Machine. You can go between the two of them, but we've got horse-by-horse analysis from Dan that's available for free for the Belmont Stakes, as well as pace figures, charts for every runner, and value plays for the race and other races itself. But for the Belmont Stakes, all of that is completely for free on the site. We've also done some in-depth analysis on breeding, the wagering options that are available for the Belmont Stakes specifically, the actual PPs in PDF form, last year's numbers in terms of what those race runners looked like for the Preakness, for all three of the Triple Crown races, and some additional components and about how difficult it is to complete the Triple Crown, including videos of all of the 12 previous Belmont failures, those that ran in the race after winning the first two. All is available in the blog section for free on PredictiveForm.com.
Dan, the Belmont Stakes is a mile and a half long, and obviously a much longer distance than the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and for that matter, the majority of the races in horse racing. As a current horse owner, what do the trainers do to prepare for this distance? And also, are all jocks created the same when running a route like this?
This is the only time in a three-year-old racing career that a horse will go a mile and a half on the dirt. Very rare that it happens, even when horses are older. From a training perspective, you really can't train distance. I mean, you can keep your horse in good shape. These are the best trainers in the country, so that's really not at issue. Distance is purely from a breeding perspective. That's what I believe anyway. I think others would tell you otherwise, but I also believe strongly that distance comes from the mother's side and speed and brilliance come from the father's side. In terms of the advantage and disadvantage of the distance, the one thing I can tell you that is consistent with coming into the Kentucky Derby is the amount of time in between races. And for that matter, only American Pharoah and Verve ran in the Preakness, but I don't think, at least from American Pharoah's standpoint, that will put any undue pressure on him. The one new shooter in the group, Made from Lucky, I think, has probably got the biggest advantage because he's the one who has avoided the Triple Crown races thus far, and so he's really the new shooter, and I know Paul will talk a little bit more about that. You know, you asked me about a jockey, and jockeys, I think jockeys are overrated, Jimmy, except when there's a jockey.
I prefer boxers, but yeah.
I think they're really overrated, except when there's change. And what's unique about this field, and Paul and I were talking about it earlier today, there are four jockey changes in this race, which you would imagine when you have the best horses in the country in the Triple Crown running for $1.5 million, you would have pretty firm choices as to who's the jockey. But Mouk Dahij gets Irad Ortiz, who's a very good jockey. That will improve his chances, though I don't like him that much. Taylor Verve goes from Joel Rosario to Gary Stevens. The reason Joel Rosario gets off is he goes to ride a Frosted. Fermento picks up Mike Smith, who is one of the top jockeys in the country. He's won the Belmont twice, and I think that's definitely going to add improvement to him. And let's see, the outside horse, Materiality, goes back to Johnny Velasquez as Javier Castellano chooses another horse to ride. So the jockey changes in this race, I think, will have impact because there's so many of them.
And Paul, there's less history and data on the horses in the longer races. How does PredictiForm prepare to analyze the numbers for the longer distance of the Belmont Stakes?
It's not necessarily easy by any means, but there's some components of it that are straightforward. None of these horses has run ever competitively more than 10 furlongs, let alone the 12 that we just talked about. So really, they're all on the same boat as we evaluate them. In most races, not this one, but in most races, when some of the horses, if not all of the horses, have actually run at this upcoming distance, the distance of the next race, we really try to weight those results at the exact same distance a little bit heavier than anything else, because we anticipate that's good, that they'll use their energy in similar ways. They're trained for that, as Dan talked about a little bit earlier. But for this, especially at this longer distance, but also because none of these horses have run there, we really focus more on how the horses have been using their energy to date. The Belmont's all about endurance. Not too surprisingly, if you go look through this, and this is another point that DZ and I will make continuously throughout the week and talked about earlier today, not a single one of these horses is a sprinter. Not a single one of these horses really has a great four furlong number, and in all honesty, all of them prefer to stalk or to close strong. So that makes things very interesting here. Closing energy in previous races can be spotted in the pace figure analysis that we do, and it's critical when extending out to 12 furlongs. Though it really does matter elsewhere. In the Belmont, we dig a little bit deeper into breeding, as Dan just talked about, to see if endurance is a common trait among similarly bred runners.
It's interesting that you said that. A couple of podcasts ago, Paul, you had given a good analogy with Usain Bolt. And when you were talking about there are no great sprinters in this race, that Belmont is all about endurance. I've been watching Shark Tank with my daughter, and Robert Herjavec was talking about how he trains with a sprinter, and Herjavec was running 5 miles, and the sprinter couldn't make it past two. And he's just like, my body is not trained for this. So you could be the fastest man in the world, doesn't mean you can run 3 or 4 or 5 miles. And so there's a lot of credence to what you said there.
It's really interesting. I've been thinking about this a lot recently. This is equivalent to that. It's not necessarily the 100 versus the marathon, but it might be the 100 versus the 400. And in the world, the fastest 100 runner is rarely one of the faster 400 runners. You don't see that because it's traditionally two very different disciplines. And though it might not seem like much to go from 10 to 12 furlongs, that extra quarter of a mile is very significant when that's nothing like what they've done up until this point.
DZ, the most obvious storyline of this year's Belmont Stakes, American Pharoah trying to become the first horse since affirmed in 1978 to win the Triple Crown. In the past 36 years, 13 other horses have tried, and they've all come up empty. John Ewing did a great article on PredictiveForm.com with video of the 12 horses, because one of them didn't run, failing to achieve the Triple Crown. Every horse but one was an even money or shorter favorite to win the Belmont, yet all fell short. So this question is a three-parter for you, Danny, and I'll do one at a time. Why is it so difficult to win the Triple Crown?
There's a lot of reasons that have been kicked around as to why it's so difficult to win the Triple Crown. Clearly, the biggest reason, in my opinion, is what Paul mentioned earlier, the distance of 1.5 miles is 25 seconds further than any of these horses have ever run in a race. And it's what's unique about that as well is it's just once around. Belmont is a 1.5 mile track. So typically, if you were to see a Churchill Downs or a Pimlico and you were to go 1.5 miles, you'd hit three turns, right? Here, there's only two turns, which means it's much more, you know, it's more difficult to pass. The track is known as Big Sandy. It's really deep, and it takes lots out of these horses. You also have a scenario where the jockeys in the race are race riding the jockey on the Triple Crown contender, in this case, Victor Espinosa. And when I talk about race riding, you think about a professional poker player playing the man and not the cards. The jockeys are playing the jockey here and not necessarily the horse. There's a chance that one of these horses, one of the competitors, is quietly sitting on the biggest race of his lifetime. So while American Pharoah has had three races in 5 weeks and four races in 8 weeks, most of these others have not had such a significant racing toll. And, you know, that might make him a little tired. And I would say the last thing, and Paul mentioned this also, we don't know how much that Preakness took out of American Pharoah. The track was completely muddy and sticky, and it's tough to say whether or not. I mean, clearly, he loved the mud, and he was, you know, prancing home, and loving the slop. But we just don't know if that took a toll on him specifically. So, yeah, the winning, getting to the Triple Crown is one thing, but winning it is a much different story.
Why, Dan, is it harder now in the past 36 years since 1978 than it was prior to those 36 years when winning the Triple Crown was much more common?
So, I believe it goes all back to breeding. In breeding, you imagine that the thoroughbred game started originally from half a dozen stallions. And as those stallions begin to splinter and you can't mate a mom and a dad with the same lineage, these families and these lines of horses begin to splinter. And what happens when you splinter is you splinter out distance, you splinter out speed, and everybody wants speed. Everybody is buying speed. And when you buy speed, you don't get stamina. And that's what the Triple Crown is based on, is stamina. So historically speaking, before there was so much noise and commotion about wanting the fastest horse, it was easier. The other thing is the size of the field. I mean, you know, many years ago, the Belmont Stakes was sometimes four horses. Now you've got eight horses, which is rather short here, but sometimes you have up to 10 or 12. What is making the Triple Crown so difficult is what's going to happen in cases that you just can't predict on the track, and that is breeding. Like I said, it is stamina, and is bigger fields.
And if the aforementioned blog posting that John Ewing did with the videos of the horses that fell short, some of them just heartbreaking losses for horses that were very close to winning the Triple Crowns. Was there one common thread that you noticed in those videos of the horses that had the opportunity to claim the Triple Crown yet failed in their bid?
Yeah, and originally I thought it was distance, but when you asked me the question, I went back to look again. I think it's more timing. I think it's more that the jockeys on these Triple Crown contenders moved too early. And you really can see it with Real Quiet as he took the lead on the far turn. He kind of fell asleep. In other words, the jockey moved so quickly, so early, that by the time he opened up lengths, he didn't see anybody else around him and sort of cruised to the finish line, not knowing that Victory Gallop was pacing down. I think with a mile and a half track and two turns, timing is so important. And it seems to me that was the biggest issue when I went back and looked at these Triple Crown failures.
Danny, you go through a process every big race, whether it's the Belmont Stakes or the Arkansas Derby, but you do analysis on these horses, and hopefully, unlike the Kentucky Derby, you didn't have to do too many that got scratched this time around. Hopefully you waited after any horses got scratched before doing your analysis. What was the process you went through for the Belmont Stakes?
Well, my process with the Belmont Stakes actually begins once the Preakness is over, very much the way a lines maker will start setting the line halfway through that Sunday's games for the following week, and trying to see really how these horses came out of their races. I watch the replay of every horse in the race five or ten times, and I've actually watched the Derby, and we have a great high-def video on the site 20 times now, so I can really key in on the four or five competitors. I spend a lot of time with the pace figures. I do an in-depth pace review, and I then compare my analysis to the value picks and see if there's anything from a value pick perspective that's really different. And most of the time, they're pretty much parallel. As you've heard, and I'm a little anal about breeding, I'll spend hours and hours on end doing in-depth breeding analysis and try to find a common thread or theme that I think can stand out. And last but not least, and this is the thing that most people use, is the PPs, the past performances. I don't spend a lot of time on there, but it's always good to take a look at the PPs to understand which trainers are hot and which jockeys are doing well in any jockey and trainer changes that might occur.
Dan, I don't know if this is a good analogy, but I'm going to go with it anyway. If I watch Animal House today, I'm going to find something that every time I've watched Animal House, I've found the funny line that I didn't remember or that I didn't notice, because there are so many subtle, brilliant comedic lines in that movie. So you talked about watching the Kentucky Derby 20 times. Is there a point in time where you don't see anything new, or do you find something new every time you watch the video in terms of your analysis?
Well, there's a finite number of times you can watch it, because you've got three or four horses that you want to watch by themselves. So once you track a horse and you can see Keen Ice, you can watch his replay, the Derby, two or three times and focus on Keen Ice, then Materiality, and then Frosted gives you a real good sense of how each of these horses individually and visually looked in their previous race. So I did that for every race and for the most recent race of every horse. Now, I got lucky in that four of these horses are coming out of the Kentucky Derby, but in some cases, horses are coming out of six or eight different races. It takes a lot more time.
Paul, the weather, absolutely brutal for the Preakness. Dan talked about American Pharoah enjoying the slop. We have a good contact who is dialed into the meteorologist world. What's the weather looking like for Saturday at the Beaumont Stakes?
I'll do some revisionist history again really quickly here and talk about the Preakness. And it's interesting because it's a question we didn't ultimately address during the podcast, because we weren't sure it would be, I didn't think it would be all that relevant. And it was incredibly unfortunate for any objective point of view, like what we do, going into the Preakness, because it was, the weather change was so intense and it altered all the dynamics of what would be a normally reasonably analyzed race in a short period of time. And the irony of it all, to me, is had the race actually started exactly on time when the post position was supposed to start, it wouldn't have even been raining or an issue at that time, which was part of the reason why we didn't think weather would be a factor. It wasn't delayed as much, but it was delayed enough to change things. And I mention all of that because it illustrates just how quickly and dramatically a perfect forecast can change and look very different. So for this week, while over an inch and a half of rain has actually already fallen out Belmont this week, only sporadic light rain is expected on Thursday and Friday, and that should lead to a fast track in dry conditions on Saturday. Forecast specifically for Saturday early in the evening is 71 degrees, very light winds of 5 to 10 maybe miles an hour in the eastern direction, and a 14% chance of rain. And I'll clarify that 14% and say that's around what we were thinking it was going to be throughout the 6 o'clock hour just 3 weeks ago at Pimlico in Baltimore. So let's hope we don't hit that 14% again just before the post of this, the 11th race on Saturday at Belmont.
No doubt. Let's hope it's a clear day. Dan, how do you see the race shaping up from a pace figure perspective? And also, with two horses withdrawing on Monday in Carpe Diem and the Truth or Else, and only eight horses running in the Belmont, does it change how the jockeys may run the race?
Well, from a pace figure perspective, you know, what I like to do is come up with my own line, if you will, which is the figure that I think a horse will need to run to win the Belmont Stakes. Last year, Tonalist ran 77.2 in his upset of California Chrome. And I think for this year, that would be a substantial number that would win the race. I think likely it might even be a little bit short of that. But I think 77 would be a fair watermark to say that's the number that's going to win the race. In terms of tactical speed and the way the race may go, the couple competitors that we give a good shot to, or a shot above American Pharoah, have drawn pretty well. So American Pharoah drew the five hole. It's obviously the best position you can be in, because he can see the horses inside of him and he can see outside. We know he's got tactical speed, and Paul talked about the fact that he very well could be the only speed in this race. So he has a tremendous draw for his running style. Moub Tahij drew the rail, which pretty much puts a damper on any chance he had. He had the rail for most of the way around in the Kentucky Derby and really faltered in the stretch. From Frosted and Materiality standpoint, Frosted draws just outside of American Pharoah, and he'll be in a good position to stalk American Pharoah. The question is whether he can keep up. Materiality draws the very outside and goes back to jockey Johnny Velasquez. Johnny V is very well known for liking to go to the lead. So you could wind up seeing him force the pace. In any case, I would suspect we are going to see a significant amount of race riding. And what that means is none of these jockeys want to see Victor Espinosa win the Triple Crown. They would rather have him lose to give themselves a chance for next year. Now, they always say, well, if I don't win, I want him to win, but I always think that's a load of crap. I think that the only way a jockey ever wants a Triple Crown is if they're riding. So I would not be surprised to see race riding take place. And as I mentioned earlier, it's riding against the man and not against the horse, sometimes at the extent of costing your own horse the race. So it'll be an interesting and very exciting race. Last year I was really down on California Chrome going into the race. We obviously like Tonalist. But in this case, I'm thrilled to have a horse that is doing so well and drawing so well with such tactical speed that it's going to make any other competitor have a very difficult time in upsetting.
So it sounds like there's an unwritten rule, Danny, that you were talking about with the race riding. Is that considered dirty?
No, I mean, it's not considered dirty. It's like putting, probably in basketball, I don't know exactly, but putting a body on a guy in the lane, that's probably a foul, but he gets away with it. So, look, last year in the Breeders' Cup Classic, you saw Victor Espinosa pretty much on Bayern, Martin Garcia on Bayern, take a left-hand turn and knock the heck out of Shared Belief. Knocked him off his feet practically, and he didn't get taken down. So unless there is clear violation, it's a non-issue and part of the game.
So we don't see fight, because that happens a lot in auto and in NASCAR, and you see drivers getting into fights all the time in NASCAR because they're part of teams,
right?
And there's a lot of guys setting up so their teammate can win the race. That's interesting. I never thought about that, Danny. Paul, it's time. People are very interested in our thoughts and selections for the Belmont Stakes. Some sort of selection or suggestion on how to wager this race, Paul.
No problem. Especially with Carpe Diem out, who is a favorite, who had been a favorite of ours in the analysis and the numbers, and was one of our favorites going to the Kentucky Derby. Now, American Pharoah, which is the five horse, is the post position that he drew today, is the clear favorite. We think he's got just over about a 50% chance to win the race. At 3-5 odds, though, which is where he stands now, one would need at least 63% confidence in Pharoah to win in order to value and bet him. We're not quite there in terms of thinking he's got that much of a chance to win this race. Plus, with all the souvenir ticket hunters and just in general the fact that he's garnering so much attention, those odds will likely get a little bit shorter and take away any value that might still be remaining. The one legitimate contender, the only legitimate contenders right now that we see in addition to American Pharoah, so the ones that could upset Pharoah, are Made from Lucky the 3, Frosted the 6, and Materiality the 8. Essentially in that order, though, Dan and I will both make a case for the 3 or the 6. The other four horses in the race are projected to be at least 6 lengths off the lead. You can, for the most part, ignore them unless something happens like the Preakness and the track just makes us throw all of this out. The track conditions make us throw out all the numbers. But based on current betting odds, Made from Lucky, it's around 12-1, still in the double digits. Again, the number 3 horse is the only horse with really decent win bet value. We had quite a bit of analysis on Made from Lucky on the site, and he gives many correlations to Tonalist. He's a new shooter. He ran 28 days ago, which is a great sweet spot. Won the Peter Pan, and even though he's lost to Pharoah before, he's progressed forward here as well. Looks like Tonalist, the numbers for his four furlong and final pace figures are almost identical, though technically Pharoah has been a little bit more impressive and looks a little bit better in this race than California Chrome did going into last year. And Made from Lucky isn't quite as strong as Tonalist. So while we definitely were on Tonalist last year, and as Dan mentioned, we were fading California Chrome, here we think for sure Pharoah is the favorite and the clear favorite in this race, but Made from Lucky just has value. The actual bets that I will make, I will bet the 3 to win as a bit of a long shot again, double digits. One bet that I would recommend is boxing an exacta with 3 different horses, including the 5, 3, and 6. The 3 and the 6 are the clear next best runners after American Pharoah. And that would actually pay out pretty well if Pharoah happens to lose, and it likely would be a close one to one of those other two horses I just mentioned. The straight trifecta is for 5, 3, 6, and 5, 6, 3, so Pharoah on top with either Made from Lucky or Frosted are some other options as well. And just because there's only four horses that are clearly in the hunt here, if you were to go as far as to look at a superfecta, it would include eight as well. So 5, 3, 6, 8. Those are the only horses I look at. That's the 3 to win, 5, 3, 6, or the 5, 6, 3 look like the best trifecta.
So I agree and see the race very similar to the way Paul does. However, I have a warm spot in my heart for Frosted as the most likely upsetter. I really like the way he looked in the Belmont Stakes. And after watching the race, it's funny, you know, I said before the week started, I thought American Pharoah had a 50, 55, 60% chance of winning. And after I got done watching the video 100 times, I was more like 50%. But Frosted, for me, would be my second choice. And Made from Lucky would be my third choice. And as well, Materiality would be my fourth choice. I think there are four horses in this race. And, you know, as Paul mentioned, if you can knock American Pharoah out of the top spot, you have a chance to cash. But the other four really look to be too slow. I mean, I just think Loop Tahij, you know, was regressing in the Derby. He draws the rail. I think Fermento finished 12th or 11th in the Derby, and he hasn't showed much at all. Keen Ice is a fighter, but, you know, he's yet to get a part of it. And Taylor Verve, I think he had his race in the sun already, no pun intended, running second in the slop at Pimlico. So what I love about our value plays is that they do a great job of telling you who not to bet. And for me, you know, the who not to bet in some cases is more important than who to bet. And especially in a race where a favorite's going to carry so much weight, there is a good chance to score as long as you don't try to get too cute and focus on who you think can finish in the top three.
That's co-founder of PredictiveForum.com and our editor and main analyst for PredictiveForum.com, along with general manager of PredictiveForum.com and PredictionMachine.com, Paul Basir. Thanks, everyone, for listening to our Belmont Stakes podcast, and hope you enjoy the race. And maybe we'll see a Triple Crown winner this year for the first time since 1978. Once again, for Dan Zucker and Paul Basir, this is Jimmy Shapiro for PredictiveForum.com.